What's up, podheads? Episode 62 of the Podio Slate podcast coming at you right now. How you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing great, man. I'm so ready for this one. We'll get into it, but I'm excited for it.
Yo, yo, yo. No, I'm just kidding. I wanted to be the one to say it this time.
That was Anthony too. And Nate. Yeah, that's Anthony and Nate, my podcast hosts in crime here. We are ready to go with that, with some nerdery for you guys tonight. We've got a fun main segment planned for you and some other stuff too. But before that, hit us on the socials, Podio Slave on Twitter and Instagram, and Podio Slave Podcast at gmail.com. We might even have a TikTok, I think, now. So start looking for that. We might be there. Who knows? A couple old guys on TikTok, you know, just having fun, playing music.
I was going to say we're hip. Hip-hop anonymous.
So, yeah, so hip.
Couldn't resist, man. That's where the eyeballs are. We got to go where the eyeballs are.
Exactly. I did follow Kat, our episode 58 guest on there. And, so I think she's one of the two people we follow right now. On there. Yeah, so we'll look for some content on TikTok from Podio Slave. Who knows? We might be doing dances. I mean, probably not, but there'll be some music. There'll be some nerdery, as usual.
Anything for spins.
Yeah, there'll be no dancing going on. So I don't think we're going to tease the main segment. So we want to just jump right into a couple setlist items.
Let's do it, yeah.
Yeah.
We want to start with the fun one or the creepy one?
The creepy one.
Nate, what is the creepy one?
Yeah, the creepy one is... there's an auction going on for locks of Kurt Cobain's actual hair. I don't know how this goes down. I didn't research enough, but I've seen auctions like this before. And basically there's, I guess, a random barber that knows it to celebrity and saves it. And it gets passed down the line and it's up for auction right now.
It's so weird. But yeah. That was my first question was, how did this hair get saved for all these years? But yeah, it's probably his barber. That's a good point. But his hair was kind of long, so like he probably wasn't getting it cut very often. And this guy just cuts it once and puts it in his pocket and says, I'm going to sell this 30 years from now at auction. That's kind of nuts.
So I read a little bit about it. It was an acquaintance of Kurt's back in 1989 during the Bleach tour. She must have cut his hair, kept him. I don't know what the deal is. In this
creepy
auction... This auction's for 6 strands of his hair. So, I mean, that's not a lot. I mean, it's not like a handful of hair here, but it's going to start out at $2,500 USD. $2,500. Wow. And you know it's going to go up from there.
Yeah, it is, actually. It's currently at current bid in real time, at least when we're recording here, with 4 days left and 22 minutes as of recording time. It's up to $3,328 at 4 bids.
Wow. And I guess she had to provide some like 2-page affidavit that some acquaintance of the woman to prove that it was her and she knew him at the time. And so who even knows if it's real? I mean, it's there's no certificate of authenticity. I mean, I don't know how you do that. DNA.
Yeah, like there was some guy there or girl there before while they were cutting the hair and they're taking pictures and signing stuff saying, yeah, this is legit. And that definitely didn't happen, I would imagine. Yeah, this is, we love nerdery. We've talked about all different kinds of nerdery on this podcast. This is weird nerdery to me. And this is a bridge too far as nerdery goes for me. I'm out. I'm not wanting any sort of hair or stuff like that from a person. That's unnecessary. I'll take a drumstick. I'll take a guitar pick. I'll take his poster, but I'm not down with the hair. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's very strange. I got the auction pulled up. There is photo evidence with her and Kurt, so I guess that kind of, you know, authenticates it to an extent. But you're probably right. There's probably a DNA analysis to kind of go along with it, like a certificate of analysis kind of thing to pair with this. But it's just strange. And if she really wanted to capitalize this, she would just sell a strand of hair and do 4 auctions.
Yeah, right.
Well, when I first heard this headline, I thought it was weird and like really, really weird and creepy because I thought it was like his estate, like, you know, trying to make a buck off it. And then I read into it and it's like, okay, well, it's not as creepy, but it's still crossing the line.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And who's going to like, imagine the person that's going to buy it. It's going to take a real special person, like a weirdo and a weirdo with deep pockets who happens to like Nirvana. Or Kurt. I don't know. This, yeah, we love nerdery. We love the kill switch engage light switch. We like the I don't know, you name it, but this is a little ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, the Deftones beer can. I'm cool with that. But
Chino's hair, you don't want his goatee hair.
I don't need that. Like I'm all set.
Now I'm trying to spin it like, how would it work with my collection? I guess you could like I could bid on the auction, get the hair and like glue it into the poster to make it more authentic, but that's just creepy, man. I don't know.
No, that's a bad idea for all involved.
This is borderline like hair doll weirdo stuff.
Mm, yeah. So somebody out there is going to spend, I mean, it's already at 3K. I'm sure with 4 days left, it'll be, by the time you're hearing this, the auction's up and it probably went for double that or maybe more. That's my guess.
Yeah. And whoever wins, if they really want to make money, they just got to split hairs, literally.
Wow.
Split hairs and go put it on the resellers market.
Wow. You're the stall king, the segue king, and now the joke king.
Yeah, punking. Yep. Pun intended.
That's Have we exhausted that one?
Yeah.
Tough crowd. Tough crowd.
That's a different segment right there. That's a different kind of nerdery that we're all a little uneasy about. But we thought it was interesting. We were like, we gotta talk about this. This is out there.
I mean, it's the first of its kind as far as that I know of something weird like that. And especially at that premium. I'm not here for it. Hard pass.
I'm not here for it. It makes me feel proud of the nerdery I do have. Like I actually can sell that box of Dry Kill Logic matches and probably get a better return than the hair. Maybe. I mean, it's.
You think you're gonna sell those for $3,000?
Hey.
Bro, I get some bad news for you.
I used them all, dude.
Yeah, I was gonna say the bad news is you took them.
The bad news is you played yourself. You're not gonna. It's not gonna happen.
The bad news is you can't ship them. So there you go.
Yeah, oh, shit.
All right. So we had another set list item that piqued our interest here. What was that one, Twan?
Yeah. So this past weekend, there was actually like national news. Like I saw it on my personal Twitter and, you know, it was all over Twitter and whatnot. But there was a massive kind of underground pop-up hardcore punk show in L.A., that was right under the 110 freeway in Los Angeles. And all right, you hear that and you're thinking, okay, cool. But then you see photos. Do you guys see the photos?
A couple of them, yeah.
Yeah. There was like over 2,000 people. And it was something straight out of a movie. I mean, it looked like insanity. So I'm not going to react to this in like the COVID lens. I mean, I know I wouldn't go to it. But that's kind of not why I thought this was a cool headline for a few other reasons, which I'll get into. But
Madball did this too, right? In New York.
Mm-hmm.
I want shows and I want to go back to that. The thought of going to an underground outdoor concert like that sort of intrigues me just because I think I'm safe being vaccinated and I would stay away from people the best I could, but not the way these are being pulled off right now. They're just a little bit like, I can't put my finger on it, but it just doesn't feel right yet. You know what I mean? Am I the only one that feels that way?
I know what you're saying, but I'm happy Twan said, you know, COVID or not. I mean, but pre-COVID, obviously I'm down here in Southern California. So I've been to events like this. And they're super fun. I mean, they're literally like in the industrial part of town. For me, it was like work events, cannabis events, you know, stuff like that. And there's like skaters and there's, you know, street art and there's music and the whole thing. So it's actually cool when you're in the scene because it's, you know, it's DIY. It's pretty rad. Those pictures are pretty insane because I haven't seen a crowd. Like the events that I had gone to weren't that big. And they definitely didn't have fireworks. The photos had fireworks. And additionally, I guess from what I read, there was some interaction with the police with rubber bullets or something like that, too. Trying to break this up.
Yeah, LAPD showed up with the rubber bullets.
Yeah, so it's a little crazy. And another thing I wanted to highlight, which you said, Twan, which is it's straight out of a movie. I don't go to LA as much as I used to. I used to go there quite often. I go there like very seldom now. And LA kind of fits, right? Because it's like Hollywood. is like a movie right now because of COVID. It's like dystopia. It's really insane. There's tents on the side of the highway. It looks so nuts right now. Like, so this almost fits that narrative because it's just, it's becoming in a lot of ways, depending on where you are in LA, very like lawless. So this isn't really far-fetched.
Yeah. No, I mean, what I was kind of getting at, it's like, I wouldn't go to this. I think people can kind of feel how, kind of hear how I feel about, you know, the gathering like this in this time, but that's another story for another time. The show itself, it was Section Hate, Alpha and Omega, Dead City. It looked so epic. There were fireworks. I saw like a, looked like a flamethrower, like some pyrotechnics. It looked like something, again, out of a movie, but also timeless. Like a lot of the photos I saw were black and white, and you could have told me those were straight out of the punk explosion from the 80s, like the whole Stephen Blush American Hardcore book and movie that came out in like the mid-2000s. Like this was throwback central, and I think you nailed it, Nate. Like this is that lawlessness that's been pent up for a while, and people are coming out swinging, and obviously people don't care about the pandemic. But like there were people on the top of the freeway with their like legs dangled over the edge. Like it looked like, oh man, almost like a gladiator setting. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like in Rome, it was just crazy. It just looked insanity. And like outside of COVID times, I'm here for it. It just looked crazy. And I'm not surprised that the cops broke it up. I mean, I don't even know how they got power down there. Must have generators.
This is, If you had told me or asked me 6, 7, 8 months ago who was going to be the first scene to do this, this is the scene that I would have picked.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and part of it is because it's in their ethos and it's, you know, it's we're going to DIY type thing. We're going to put this on. We're going to make this happen. No one else is doing it. We're going to be the ones to do it. Anti-establishment type stuff. But it just, it's something about it's, you know, if it's not COVID times, I would like to see it too because it looked awesome. And the flamethrower is badass. I just pulled that picture up and showed you guys. Like, it's like I'm standing back 20 feet, but I'd like to see that, you know, in this big crowd of people and everybody going ham just because there's that pent upness that we've talked about numerous times. People are going to go nuts. But I'd like that step before it to make sure that we're okay doing this. Now, they're outside, which is better than nothing. And a lot of times outside is, you know, as safe as you're going to be compared to other stuff, but it's still, it just seems extra.
Yeah. I think I agree with your sentiment both. And there's part of me that's on the other side, which is like, fuck it. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I guess because I'm down here, you know, when I go to LA, like I know I'm going into what has become, unfortunately, a dystopian environment in a lot of ways. And I'm not talking about like certain parts of LA. I'm talking like all of LA is just gnarly. Like I go to like West Hollywood and there's like boarded up buildings that used to be like Gucci, and it's like, you know, right on Rodeo Drive, like there's just so much chaos, mainly like because of COVID for sure, but like you just said, Tone, like the whole anti-establishment, like that brought it out, and I don't see it going away anytime soon. I remember we were all in the group text talking about the whole GameStop thing. And this is like, you know, this is Project Mayhem happening in real time. Well, that's LA right now in a nutshell. So this is on brand for what's going on in Los Angeles. Anyone that's listening right now knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's crazy. So much to the point that there used to be tours, double-decker buses, the ones you see in like London, that would go like past like celebrity houses in Beverly Hills. Now they kind of roll through Skid Row to kind of showcase like real time, like this is a movie, but it's real life. It's like a reality show of real life, which is very sad, but shows kind of the progression of Los Angeles, or sorry, the degression of Los Angeles, which is, I don't see it coming back for a long time. And this kind of DIY thing's cool. The only reason I kind of sided on this is cool is because it's like, you know, we kind of geek out like, oh, it'd be cool to put on our own shows and do it like anti-Ticketmaster Live Nation. Well, this is that, definitely, it's to the extreme, right? So,
yeah, two things. One, if you had you're listening for Nate to say in real time, you've got to drink 4 times so far this episode.
Yeah.
And two, yeah, the anti-establishment piece I don't hate, because sometimes the establishment's wrong. I am a little worried about big cities in general, like New York doing one, LA doing one. Do we even ever get back to some of these types of big cities as a society? Like, is this a thing that's going to just kind of go by the wayside and be a little bit more dystopian, as Nate's explaining LA is right now in spots, or most of it? That might be a thing that is not good, you know, long term as we come out of this. But I hope nothing, you know, super bad comes of it. I hope it didn't end up being a super spreader. Maybe a lot of the people were vaccinated. Who knows? I mean, we've been doing vaccines in this country for a while and a decent amount of people are there. So who knows?
You know what the kicker of this whole thing is? Did you guys see the flyer for the show?
No.
It said like secret location or hidden location. Like, imagine if this was like, and obviously people talk and people know, and you know, I'm not from that area, so I'm sure like that might be a very well known place to do something like that. But yeah, over 2,000 people for a secret venue show. It was I probably use that word a million times right now, but in total insanity.
Mm.
But I think that event will be remembered for a long time because the visuals that accompany it, some stunning photography. Like there's some black and white stuff that it's timeless, and it'll be printed in books. I think it'll have a little bit of a legacy. And then when you throw in the COVID times, yeah, I think this one will live on for better or for worse. That's a fun one. I think we hit that pretty good. We hit the Cobain stuff. I think we're jumping right into the main segment tonight.
It's time.
Is it time?
Yeah.
What we got, Tone? What's going on?
So the main segment tonight, we've kind of danced around this a few times. I think we brought it up fairly recently on a podcast in the not too recent past here. Album artwork. And instead of just being like, yeah, I like this one, yeah, I like that one, we kind of broke it down into a couple of different categories. We have obviously our favorites. We have the worst, some of the worst stuff we've come across in our travels as music fans, some of the most bizarre stuff that we've come across in our travels, and then stuff that we think adds to the music that kind of fits the band, fits the mystique, fits the music. Those are the kind of loose categories we have. Now, I know we talked in pre about each doing two, but I think we're all going to have our own kind of spin on this, and it may not necessarily be two. It may be you got two or three or four for one category and one kind of broad statement for another one. Who knows? So we make the rules here at the Patio Slate Podcast. If you don't like it, please stay. Please listen.
We love you. Please stay.
We love you.
We need you.
Thank you for sticking around. But yeah, that's kind of the gist of it tonight. So who wants to lead off with, do we want to do favorites first? We want to do worst? How do we want to do it?
You know what? Let's start on a negative note, and then we can work our way up.
Yeah.
And go worst.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Nay, no stalling for you, man. You're going first.
We're starting with favorites.
Jeez, man. Where you been?
That wouldn't be negative, I don't think. So.
Oh, sorry. I was kind of lost in translation, but we're definitely going to edit that.
No, we're leaving that.
We're leaving it.
We're leaving
sorry,
that.
Bro. This is how the sausage is made.
No, that's staying right in. So worst, and these don't have to be the worst, but some that came to mind. That's how I approached all these.
Yeah. Worst. First thing that came to mind right out of the gate, didn't even have to think about it, was every time I even see the album cover, it just like, I shake my head in disregard. It is Papa Roach, Love, Hate, Tragedy. Maybe it might be the worst album cover of all time. And I love those guys, but man, what a miss.
The baby?
The baby with the headphones, the red cover, even the red throws off, even if they want to do the baby with the headphones, the red just makes it like too intense. I don't know. And the album's good. I think that's the worst part, is that it's a disservice to the art, the music that's on the album. So I got to say that was in my worst list. Another one, and actually opened for Papa Roach on this tour at the State Theater in Maine, was Nonpoint and their album Vengeance. I don't know if you guys know that one.
Gonna look it up.
I think it was thrown together. This is very much like clip art type stuff. And
oh god, I know this one.
Horrendous.
Yeah.
Horrendous. Like, I didn't listen to it because it was so bad. I think I listened to it maybe once, but I was like, this is shitty, man. Why would you, like, come on, just if you're gonna do an album cover, this is just third person. I don't know how this stuff works internally. just do something simple at that point. Like just do your logo non-point and that's it. Like a plain, like a Weezer type thing, like simple, you know, instead of doing this clip art type stuff, cause it's just really bad. So unfortunately, and I love you guys, non-point, if you guys are listening, don't turn down the interviews.
Well, the thing is with that one, it came out in 2007. Like, I don't know. I just have this like kind of thought in my head that like, as time goes on, people are more aware and whatnot. So like, I could see if that came out earlier, but it was, you know, it wasn't too far ago, 2007. Yeah. That's a miss. And Papa Roach, I think I mentioned this to you guys. There's a band, Heart Attack Man, that opened for Crime and Stereo that I saw a while ago. They have an album cover that's very similar to Love, Hate, Tragedy with the baby. And this isn't a segue because we'll get to this later, but one of my bizarre picks for tonight is kind of reminds me of Love, Hate, Tragedy a little bit.
Oh, wow.
Teasing it a little bit.
So the Vengeance cover, I mean, it's like, that's like a band like Nonpoint already established. I'm kind of surprised by that. That looks like their MySpace page.
Exactly.
Like they had like a friend make them. They're in college and they're, hey, make us some cool like me's to put up on our MySpace page. Like, not good, guys. Sorry. And again, we love that band, but that our album art does not make me want to listen to that record. And I'm looking at that Heart Attack Man one right now, Tuan. And yes, very similar. Red background, baby, mousetrap. Like, what are we doing here? Oh, boy. And then, Nate, it's funny you say Love, Hate, Tragedy, because I had Love, Hate, Tragedy under Bizarre, and it's probably because I love the album. Mm. Otherwise, yeah, it's probably a worst for me. But I just love the album so much that I'm like, I'll just put this under Bizarre. Like, it's weird. I don't get it. It's their second record. They went from being a full-on nu metal act with their first record to being a little more rock, a little bit less of the rap part with this record. And this the baby with headphones, and it just doesn't make a ton of sense. So...
Yeah, I with all this stuff, like, and I'm gonna back up. I kind of probably should have led with this. Like, me personally, I'm someone that probably invests way more stock into album artwork than a normal person, and I think that goes for like everything we talk about on this podcast. We're like, you know, we pay close attention to that. We pay close attention to album rollouts, the backdrops at tours, and the whole setup. Like, it just that's nerdery. So to see like album covers like that, and it makes you wonder just, all right, who thought of it? Who approved it? You know, it's not like someone has an idea and it gets pumped out. Like, there's bands have teams at the label. They have managers. Like, you'd think someone would be like, eh, that ain't it, man.
I agree. I think we all kind of share your sentiment in terms of like, super geeking out even down to the artwork, because it's, you know, it makes a lasting impression. It's like, don't judge a book by its cover. Like, it holds true to music. Like, I saw that album cover for Nonpoint Vengeance and I was like, the music might be epic, but that's just, it's hard to pull that CD out and spin it because of that artwork. And to your point, like, there's a team that goes beyond this, and on top of that, the band has to give the thumbs up. From what I know.
Absolutely, I would think, yeah.
Right? So they have to be like, yeah, this is actually perfect. This is great. Or you should change this or that. So I'm surprised this went through. And then Papa Roach, like, same thing. Like, I think the Infest artwork fit, well, it's very new metal, first of all, right? So to skew left or right and just do this thing, I guess it was, from what I read, the Papa Roach Love Hate Tragedy artwork was a contribution from their former drummer, David Buckner. I hope he wasn't fired because of this.
Oh boy.
But yeah, I mean, maybe it was like one of those things like where like, hey, like maybe everyone's disagreeing and even like the marketing team's like, we shouldn't do this, but like literally the band member brought it to the table, so we can't like say it sucks.
That just, I don't know why, it just reminded me of that part in Can't Hardly Wait when the band is at the house party and they're going to go on, and they're, one of the guys is wearing a t-shirt of the band they're in. It's like, you can't wear a t-shirt of the band you're in. He's like, but I made them. Like, we're all wearing them. Put it on.
That's right.
Just reminded me of that for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, the more I think about it is, a label is there to just promote a product. That's all it is. So you would think that someone would have spoke up about the baby.
Maybe. I mean, maybe they were like, that's genius. Less is more. Let's go. Red background, baby, headphones. Let's just rock out to the music. Let's let the album do the talking. And then for me, it kind of, and it didn't work. I mean, it's, I didn't put it in as a favorite.
We're talking about
I didn't have it in as a worst of all time. So yeah, I guess. Yeah. Good for you guys.
I guess the only way to know is to take a poll, you know, Maybe like everyone likes it except for us three or something. I don't know.
No, I think it's been widely panned. I think you're right.
Yeah.
But we do love that record. I mean, that's my favorite Papa Roach record.
Yeah, exactly. The album cover is a disservice to it, but.
All right. I'll give you the ones that I had an overarching, and I can give you examples, but an overarching genre, death metal. They're all terrible. I'm sorry. I can't do the blood everywhere and the, you know, decapitated bodies and look at all of like Cannibal Corpse's stuff. We've brought them up. I brought them up 2 weeks in a row now, but no, not for me. And lots of death metal is that way. I think there was, I listened to a podcast back in the day. You guys heard of Disgraceland?
Yeah.
He does, you know, behind the music-y stuff about different artists. And there was a whole episode about some death metal from like Iceland or something. And one of the album covers was one of the guy's bandmates killed himself. So he took a picture of it and used it as an album cover. And I'm like, no. Wow. I mean, I went and looked for it, but I'm like, no. It's just not for me, man. I don't need that in my life.
Reminds me of the band Exhumed. I think that's how you say Exhumed. I have actually a couple of their 7 inches in a split, and it's aggressive. It's in that line, and it's over the top, and it's intended for shock, and it fits the music. But I don't know. I'm actually trying not to look at it. Like, that's how bad it is. Like when I see their albums and whatnot.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder if it's, speaking outside of us three, if others would differ because it fits the music properly, maybe. I don't know. You know, is it more in one of our categories, like fits the music, adds to the music?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, it definitely fits the music. I mean, you're not going to have like a rainbow and gumdrops and things like that. So in that respect, it fits. But I get you. I don't know what the alternative is, though.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I'm clearly pigeonholing everything, and it's not necessarily the case for me. I'm not typically like that with music, but I just don't need that imagery. That's like, I'm not buying a t-shirt. I'm not putting a poster up on my wall. I don't know. But that doesn't mean that some of it's okay, but some of it, most of it's not for me is my point. And so that's where I get they put them in my worst category.
Yeah. I think you said earlier, less is more. That would be a good less is more type situation.
Totally.
You know, if you have a good logo.
Don't put the picture of your buddy who just shot his head off. You don't need that.
Man. That's tough. That's a little aggressive. Or a lot aggressive.
A lot of aggressive. Yeah. All right. Twan, what did you have for worst?
So I had the album that came to mind is one that's come up a couple times in this podcast. And then when I went to go think of a second art, a second album, I just kept coming back to this artist. And it is Hurley by Weezer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it came up on the Frank Maddox.
It did, yeah.
Frank Maddox interview where I just, you know, he kind of joked around that he put that together. But I think, so here's the thing is, obviously I get the intent of it. It's obviously like a joke. And if you look at their other albums, like Ratitude, they're not being serious. And even the colored albums, you know, the way they're dressed, with the red album and he's wearing
red album's ridiculous,
cowboy
yeah.
hat and whatnot. And I get it. But here's where it kind of gets a little iffy for me. It actually takes away from the Blue album and Pinkerton, I think. It just, to me, it's just like they're kind of, I don't know, it takes away from their legacy for me personally. Others will be like, well, they've always been kind of jokey. Yeah, well, maybe so. But, and I'm not like a Weezer fanboy here. Those first two albums are the two for me, but I don't know. I think they're terrible.
I have Hurley thoughts, not the album per se. So Hurley is a character from the TV show Lost, right?
Yep.
How are you going to be lost and not have food and still be as big as Hurley was? That always was the joke that came up when that album came out. I was like, yeah, it doesn't. And then why is Weezer using him as their cut? Like, a huge Lost fans? It just didn't make any friggin' sense. It's definitely not with the music. They've done some iconic, you know, the Blue Album and Pinkerton's album covers are iconic, right? For this to be where they ended up, just I don't get it sometimes.
And that's, you nailed it. It's like, how do you go from really Pinkerton? Because we've talked to, remember, Nate, when we talked about this, that
yeah
album cover just draws you in. I remember when we talked about it, I was like, I want to be in that album artwork. And then for mm-hmm. it to go from that to a picture of a dude on a sitcom or TV show, it's like yeah. weird. But what were you going to say, Nate?
The way we're talking about it, like, I'm trying to like relate, but it's hard because we're not in bands. But it's like, if it's something that's always going to be out there, I kind of relate like an album cover to like getting a tattoo. Like, that's forever. It's out there forever. Like, you can't reverse it. I mean, I guess you can get a tattoo removed now, but you can't reissue an album with a different cover and call it a proper release because it's a re-release. So if you're going to put that much effort into writing music, and luckily you're signed to a major, at least in Weezer's case, like, you would think, maybe it's because we're all operating on, you know, different cadence in terms of professionalism, but like, we'd want it to be the best of the best represented visually to encapsulate what we're talking about on this podcast. So for the band, you know, like you said, Weezer, Pinkerton, like, that album artwork resembles the music in a lot of ways, and it's one of our categories, obviously. Blue Album, simplicity. You know, we mentioned the Cars on here with Rick Ocasek from the Cars. It's kind of like this new wave type thing. So like, the blue, I think it's just the color, that color blue fits the theme of the album. Them standing there is, I don't know if that works or doesn't work. But yeah, for them to do this thing with Hurley, it's like, oh, god damn it. Like, it's all the whole punk thing we talked about with Blink. Like, you're taken away from something that is better than you're representing. You're doing yourself a disservice, and yeah. it's irreversible. So it's, for us as nerds, it's very interesting because we can't really wrap our heads around it. We know we wouldn't do it that way.
It's just Rivers trolling us.
I think that's yeah. I think, honestly, I mean, there's no other, I don't know.
That's my thought.
Remember when we interviewed Frank Turner, and he's like, when you put out your ninth album, you got to kind of justify it. And that's, mm-hmm. I think Rivers has that mindset where he's like, no one needs to hear another Weezer album, so we're just gonna fucking dick around, you know.
And they do. I mean, they still do write catchy songs. A lot of it's not up my alley anymore compared to their early stuff. But Nate, we saw them. We've talked about it. We saw them in Hampton Beach probably 10 years ago, and
yep.
the set list was on point. There was no duds in there because they know how to write songs. So even up to today, and I haven't listened to Van Weezer yet, which just came out, but I've heard it's good, surprisingly good. So that intrigues me. And they still, you know, they still find ways to keep their names on people's lips. You know what I mean? And yeah. the Hurley covers away, the Ratitude, the red album where Rivers has got a weird mustache and a cowboy hat. Like, they're just, I think he's just trolling us, and it's, and people are talking about it.
I think if it was up to me, I think I would go the Foo Fighters route, which is like, take your art and artwork seriously, but if you want to have fun, leave it to the music videos. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're gonna have fair. I like that.
You know, like, that's like something that can be fun. But like, album artwork and the songs on the album, especially if you're like a legitimate band, like, should be, you know, consistent in that manner. But if you want to have fun, like, not take yourself too seriously. Like, yeah, we're rock stars, but we're not like, you know, we don't need to be like the fucking Metallica of the world or whatever. Yeah, have fun in your music videos, but like, album artwork, that's forever. Like I said, the tattoo thing, like, we're picking up that album and deciding, should I buy this? It's literally a consumer,
it's the first impression.
Good. Yeah. So CBG, like, do I really want to buy this? I could buy it, or I could just fucking stream it at this point. So,
I mean, I waffle with this because we just talked about Love, Hate, Tragedy. And I think that, again, I think that's Papa Roach's best record. And it's not because of the album art. So, like, is it that important? Meh. It depends, I think. It depends on the band. It depends on the aesthetic that they're trying to put out there. I think a band like Deftones, obviously, mm-hmm. with Frank Maddux, you know, kind of helming that visual ship with the band for all these years, knows what they want to be at all times. And it works for them to do that. You're not going to get a Hurley cover from a Deftones record. But you are from Weezer because that's what they are. Like, that's just, maybe it kind of fits. Maybe it's okay.
Well, here's the thing is that's what they are now. And that's what they've molded into. And unfortunately, it does taint how I look at other products that they put out.
Completely agree.
Yeah. All right.
We could do a whole episode on
it. I know. I was going to say we could, and we should at some point. Do we want to jump into Bizarre?
Yes.
I feel like this is a good segue. Bizarre.
I gave you my first one. I'll give you my second one then, because you guys already heard the first one was the Papa Roach, but Aerosmith, Get a Grip.
Oh,
you're
man.
Both laughing because you both know it.
And I had it when I was like 8, 93, 94. Oh, yeah, on tape. Yeah.
And it's a great record.
It is.
It's a great Aerosmith record.
Yep.
Great record, period. Not just Aerosmith. It's just an awesome record.
Eat the Rich, baby.
Oh, Eat the Rich to open. Living on the Edge. Amazing. Just so many good songs. Yeah, Crying's a great song. You're right. It's an iconic Aerosmith album with a bunch of great music videos with it too, but it's the cow udder with the Aerosmith on the cow and Get a Grip.
A piercing, right? Isn't there a piercing?
Yeah, it's just ridiculous and kind of awesome at the same time.
Oh man, yeah, I'm looking at it. This could be, you know, I know we had the segment band Vantage and Bandicap. This is like a Bandicap album cover. You're right. And Bizarre because it's just the only thing you think of is why. Like, why?
Exactly.
Why do this?
Whose idea was it? What's this? Is there symbolism? What is it? And if so, what is it? And because they obviously kept adding to it, right? So it was like, all right, we have a cow udder. Nah, not good enough. We're going to brand our logo. Nah, not good enough. Throw a piercing in there.
I got to say it, Nate. Sorry. Joke's on you. They sold 20 million copies of this record.
Damn.
It wasn't a Bandicap album cover at all. this proves my point that the music is more important, right?
True. Yeah.
You remember when we did the Bandicap episode and I kind of wavered on Butthole Surfers, where it's so bizarre that it actually helped them. There's no way that name didn't help them.
Totally.
I feel like that's, maybe you're right with this.
I think for some bands, this type of thing works. It keeps their name on your lips. It keeps people talking about them, thinking about them, sending pictures to their friends like we would do. Like, I mean, we did that earlier today. I sent you guys a couple pictures in my travels of weird, dumb album covers. Sorry, Edema. And, you know, it's one of those things where it could really flop. And if the music also sucks, like, you're screwed. But if it's Aerosmith's Get a Grip and it's that record, how good that record is, it doesn't matter what's in the cover. You know what I mean? It could just be the cow udder like it was. So
I agree. There's a certain point where I'm trying to make an analogy. Like, if the packaging on like a bag of chips is terrible, what do I care? You know?
I think it has some say, you know, every grocery store you go to, like, you're choosing things. Well, some of it's based on trust, but new products, it's based on aesthetics all day.
Branding.
You know?
Yep.
Yep. So, I mean, unfortunately, that's just how it plays out. One thing I was thinking about for this album in particular is, and I didn't think about this when I was writing these albums down, is when it came out. So this album came out in 1993 with the whole cow thing. I can't help but reference, you know, Gateway Computers and the whole cow thing. So maybe it's just a time and place, you know, like it's early 90s, really. And just fits. I mean, like early 90s is definitely kind of like this imagery kind of fits that era, I guess. It's still weird, but maybe at the time it was appropriate. So we have to actually almost look at it through that lens. It's like, at the time it worked. I don't think Papa Roach, Love, Hate, Tragedy, that artwork ever worked, but this may have actually worked in the 90s because it's very like, I don't know.
It's definitely got a 90s vibe to the cover. I'll give you that. I love that you liken it to Gateway Computers.
I thought you were going to go like Mad Cow Disease Explosion.
Oh, yeah. Well, that
from
was
the 90s.
Yeah, that was a thing back then, too. Still a thing today. I don't know if you guys know that, but it does still happen. That's a different type of nerdery.
Overshadowed by COVID.
Yeah.
Another story for another time.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a great record. I'm kind of excited to go back and listen to it tomorrow because I haven't listened to it in quite some time. And I had it as a kid too, just like you did, Twan. And it was a CD that I played a ton playing video games with my brother when I was like 9. So yeah. Like it'll be fun to revisit and be like, oh man, I remember this song. I haven't heard it in forever. Throwing some stuff up on the playlist this week will be fun too. So,
all right, I'll jump in here. I get two. The first is The Urge, Receiving the Gift of Flavor. And this is the one that's kind of adjacent to Papa Roach.
Oh yeah.
And the Heart Attack Man. It's the baby doll with, I think, a spoon and like weird, almost looks like a flame or something in the background. It's just,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't remember like the lyrics or theme of the music per se. So I don't know if there's like a connection or tie back there, but if there is, I don't remember it and I didn't get it. Love the music, but I don't think the cover helped at all.
So The Urge, this looks to be maybe their first major or mainstream release, right?
Was it? Probably.
I think so. It's early on in their career, if anything.
I think it's major label debut. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they obviously were banned before that and probably had some other stuff out. But this goes back to Nate's point of, especially if you're new and you're trying to like break through, this could fall super flat. Right. And make you just look kind of ridiculous. Like, save the baby for album 2, like Papa Roach did. Right?
The album 2 cheat code.
Yeah, if your music's good, it doesn't matter where it is. Obviously, we've said that too. But if this, like, oh, we're trying to break through. And like, if I'm walking through the aisles, the stacks in this pop, this came out in 96. And I'm like, oh, I could grab this or, oh, wow, Evil Empire. I'll grab that instead. Like, you know, because it just looks cooler and whatever. But if you're already established and you've got that big album under your belt, a la Papa Roach and Infest, then you can throw the baby on the cover and who cares?
Yeah. Sophomore, you got some comfort level. You already have a dedicated fan base or consumer base that's buying your product. Irregardless of the album cover or even the music for that matter, like people are going to buy it. Back then it's a special case because there was no way to listen to it beforehand. But yeah, I'm looking at this album cover. And Twan, like, I think we talked about it on one of the episodes. Like, you sent me this cassette, right?
Yeah.
Or was it this one?
It was a different one.
I found that the other day in my box full of random shit. And yeah, it's a it's a disservice to the music because it's like, it doesn't fit. And I think we can't help us three, like, get super nerdy on the fact that, like, if it doesn't fit, it's like a waste of time / you know, you could have done better.
Right.
And we're just getting super like critique, almost like a restaurant, you know, reviewer, like you could have done better or you could have, you know, presented it this way. And this is the third Frank Maddux shout out, but like that fits the music so perfectly that it makes the album like better, you know? So this is a takeaway. And even like the sound of The Urge, like this doesn't represent that at all. I don't know. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Like, was this cleared by the band? Was it cleared by, who was it cleared by? Was it just like a, nope, this is what we're doing, too bad, unfortunately.
Part of me kind of likes that this is what we're doing, too bad, deal with it, fuck you, attitude, though. I mean, and that fits the urge.
Right. Hey, maybe we'll get one of those dudes on one of these days. That'd be fun. We can ask them.
Absolutely. Production meeting mid-podcast. Love it.
So I'll jump into my second one, and I'll be quick on this one. It's The Wonder Years, their debut full length, Get Stoked on It. I have the CD. Mm-hmm. I bought it back in like 2008. And this could fall into the worst category too, but I put it under bizarre. It's like a cartoon of Captain Crunch kissing the Kool-Aid. What is it? The Kool-Aid man, but it's a female Kool-Aid woman. Yeah. And it looks like on a bed or something. It's just really bizarre. I get it's light, it's funny, and they were young. I mean, this was 14 years ago, but I don't know. It just doesn't. I guess it fits the time of that like pop punk with breakdowns before they kind of found their sound now. But one thing I do know is that the band does not like this album, and I'm sure the album artwork is a reason why. I feel like I remember like Soupy Campbell, that's him, right? Soupy Campbell,
yeah,
singer.
Dan Campbell, yep.
Yeah, I don't think they like this album.
Well, it's early. It's early in their career. This is a ridiculous album cover. Captain Crunch making out with what looks to be a female version of the Kool-Aid man, the Kool-Aid woman, I guess. Not great, but I mean, they were super, like you said, they were super young and they obviously have changed and grown up and put out more mature music and album covers since then. And I love that band. The Greatest Generation is an awesome record. Cardinals. The one after it, I'm drawing a blank on the name of it. It's an awesome record. And even the one with Sister Cities is on it. It's too good too. Yeah, Sister Cities is good too. But No Closer to Heaven is the one after The Greatest Generation. They had a pretty good album, three-album run there that I like. They grew up a little bit, started, you know, kind of scratching that itch for me a little more. So, but that's a tough album cover. Yeah, I'm with you.
It's tough. I keep referencing the year. So this is also 2007. And so I'm trying to think, like, was that like the best they could do at the time kind of thing? Because I always talk about it. We've talked about it so many times on here, at least us three. Is like pre-2007, post-2007 is like iPhone, pre-iPhone, past. Like post-iPhone, like you can do so much creative stuff. Like, so was this like kind of like, you know, the tip top of like creativity at the time, slash, you know, were they in a rush maybe? I don't know. I mean, this looks like a meme or something. Doesn't really look like an album cover.
It looks like 17-year-olds came up with it, which I think they were close to that age at the time.
I think they were late teens, early 20s.
Yeah, like 19, 20, 21.
Yep, exactly.
And I mean, I would have done stupid shit like that at that age too.
Yep, so, 100%.
Totally. Could have been a lot worse.
But I guess one thing to think about is like, this could not have been the album cover for The Greatest Generation. Like, it wouldn't have hit. You know what I mean? It just, and that's why I always kind of fall back on, no, it does matter. Like the CD cover does matter. The artwork does matter. And when it hits, it hits. And when it misses, it can take away from it. But
totally. Yep.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I mean, even like, I think we brought up Deftones earlier, but like Deftones, their best artwork is represented by the albums, but the worst are still good because they're just simple. So it's like, it's not a distraction from the music. It's just what it is. So if it's a distraction, like it's the non-point thing, it's like, I don't even want to listen to this fucking album because I don't want to, like, I almost feel embarrassed pulling this album out. So, yeah.
What you got, Nate?
Good call.
Yep.
Good call on that one. Nate. All right. So I have two. First one that came to mind was Jane's Addiction, Ritual de la Habitual. Something about this album cover just always creeped me out. I mean, I guess most people would agree, maybe, that it's just like a weird kind of like claymation type album cover with like weird, I don't know, just strange. So I chose this one because I remember seeing it for the first time and just being weirded out as like a kid, like, I don't want to like listen to that. It's like weird.
I'm just pulling it up. I have never seen this album cover before.
I think all their album covers are kind of strange. So they're kind of like a bizarre band in terms of album cover work. Perry Farrell fits that narrative a little bit. Nice guy, but yeah, so this one, it was the first one that came to mind. It's just like bizarre because you don't know what to think of it, especially as a kid seeing it for the first time. You're like, what? Like, is this, I guess it's an orgy. Is that what an orgy is? Weird.
Yeah, threesome anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was one of them. I don't know what you guys think of that one. It's kind of
looking at it for the first time in a long time, if not ever. Yeah. That if I first saw this at like 10 or whenever this came out, I'd be like, whoa.
Yeah. Can I even buy this?
Yeah, right. Like I probably would have been told no at the CD authority, it's an interesting artistic choice. It's bizarre. Bizarre is a good spot for this.
So a couple things that come to mind. One is, I assume this came out in the 90s. It screams 90s. So if it didn't come out, I'm surprised. But it also, you could swap this out for like a Chili, like this could have been the Chili Peppers cover for like an early 90s album and it would have worked. It just has that vibe. It's bizarre. Like you
it's
can get lost
in it.
A little
weirder than the Chili Peppers would do, but I hear what you're saying. I definitely feel that. It came out in 1990. It'll be 31 this year.
Yeah, that's a good choice, Nate. That is bizarre. There's a lot going on. You can really dig into this.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And actually to your point with the whole Chili Peppers thing, like they kind of came up in a similar time, right? So yeah, and they even shared band members and stuff, so and both those bands, Jane's Addiction and Chili Peppers, were super heavy into drugs, I think heroin in particular. So like when I see this album cover, I can't help but think like, oh, that's what like heroin's like. You're just like fucked up and like making weird shit.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know if it's all heroin with that, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just thinking like, is that, I don't know.
As Chili Peppers lost a member, right? Due to an OD.
Yeah.
Early on. Yeah.
Hillel Slovak.
Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, as a, when I'm thinking about it as a 10-year-old, like thinking like, oh, that's what it's like to be on drugs, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know. So yeah, that was one. Another one that I chose, even though it's pretty simple, but the first time I saw it was like I got almost like creeped out. Was Peter Frampton, I'm In You.
Wow.
Yeah.
Peter
Frampton. The name kind of speaks for itself after you see this album cover. It's a retro version of a, what? I don't know, DM, dick pic type thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Bizarre because Peter Frampton is one of my favorite, you know, guitarists. So it's like when I see this album cover, I'm like, dude, that's a miss, man. I don't know if I want to know you, you know, like, mm-hmm. And the fact that you chose this for your album cover is like, really, man?
What year was this? This was what, 70s?
Oh, it's got to be 70s.
Yeah.
I won Peter Frampton tickets from the oldies station in Portland probably 15 years ago.
Did you go?
I couldn't. No, I ended up giving them to, damn. I don't remember who I gave them to. But yeah, I couldn't go, but I called just cause I was like, happened to be in the right place at the right time deal and called and they're like, you win. And I was like, holy shit. I just won Frampton tickets. Cool.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, couldn't go.
This seems very on point for that era, though. I feel like I've seen this cover a million times.
You have, with different dudes in that same shirt with the same hair and the tight pants. And, yep, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. This is a good pull.
It
is bizarre. Yeah. It's
something.
If anybody follows us on Twitter and saw that I recently, a couple of days ago, commented Tino on a iconic album post as a joke.
Oh, yeah.
It looks similar to that. Like the same pose, his legs up in the air and leaning down, like, look at me. Like, this is what I'm sending you on a Saturday night. What are you up to?
Yeah. You up?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's the name of the album should be You Up.
That would be the re-release. That would be.
Yeah. I'm In You. Wow. And that's also pretty.
That's pretty aggressive.
Yeah. So objective, I guess it fits the title because it's very self-explanatory in a lot of ways. I'm In You in this pose, but, I get creeped out every time I see it. Like, come on, man. You could have done better.
Frampton comes alive.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to listen to that. I don't think I've heard anything off this album, but I wouldn't be able to listen to it without visualizing that album cover. And I think it takes away for sure.
But not in the time that it came out. See, that's the difference.
Yeah.
I guess.
The time that it came out, you're probably like, another open shirt dude on the cover. Like bent kneeling down, like laying down, come hither deal. They all did it, so who cares? You know?
Right.
Yeah, I think you're right.
All right, we got two more categories, but I think we should each do one from favorite and one from adds to the music because they're probably similar, in similar veins for each of us. I would guess, and I'm gonna offer you my first one right now. You ready?
I'm ready. Which category?
Favorite. Green Day's Dookie.
Classic.
Nice.
Absolutely classic.
Classic. One of my favorite records growing up, one of the first albums I've ever owned. If you want to hear that story, go back to episode 3. Apologies about the doesn't sound as good as we do today. But fun conversation. I think that was the night that we kind of really found our groove talking about what brought us to music and things we grew up with. And this was one for me. I listened to Dookie as a 9, 10, 11-year-old nonstop. I was a huge Green Day fan then. Had the poster of this album, which I don't know where it is now, and that is... I'm heartbroken about it because it's the album cover, but it's expanded. So if you haven't seen the album cover, most people have, but it's, if you look at it closely, it's a lot of monkeys throwing poop, which is kind of funny, but it's even more of that scene. So a lot more monkeys doing different things, throwing poop at each other in this like city with an explosion and the whole nine yards. So just an iconic album cover. Green Day, obviously a formative band for us and one of my favorite records growing up, one of the first, you know, pop punk albums I got into as a kid. So this was Green Day Dookie.
Absolutely classic. And it looks like a you know, notebook type drawing that, you know, you'd see a classmate scribble on, and it kind of fit that time, right? 94. I mean, that's the age where I would do something like this, you know, scribble in my notebook. But man, I didn't know that they had a poster for this where you could see like beyond this. And I'm sure that's worth big bucks now. Just saying.
Thanks. Rub it in.
So I'm zooming in right now on the cover, and there's a dog in the bottom right. So if you have this album cover, just if you have the internet, you can go search it. But there's a dog throwing poop with a fly tapping the dog on the shoulder and says, "Excuse me, sir, are you just going to throw that away?"
Yeah, it's stuff like that. It's almost like a Where's Waldo of, exactly. of monkeys and dogs throwing poop at each other.
Yep. I was just going to say the whole Where's Waldo thing. Yeah, man, this album cover is iconic, and it's like so fitting of the times. Like you said, Tuan, like this is like something we'd scribble on a book, like trying to be funny, but this is the legit album artwork, and it fits the music. So it's well represented, I feel like, for this album. 94, I think it dropped, right, Dookie?
Yeah, yep. And there's there's dogs smoking weed on top of a building. There's it's a great album cover, and I wish I had that poster still.
It's an, as we say, it is an all-time album cover. This would be in the album cover Hall of Fame
easily.
Yeah, I think for the time too, like we were all so young, so I remember getting lost in this artwork as a kid, like trying to understand music and just like getting lost in this artwork, like what is this, what's going on? I still do, but then especially.
Only $18 on Amazon. I might buy one.
Wow.
Oh, nice.
All right, what do you guys have for a favorite?
All right, I'll start us off. I did have two. The one I won't talk about, and you can look it up on your own if you're listening, is the Hope Conspiracy's Death Knows Your Name. It's just a really cool album cover with like a ram skull with a snake. And anyway, you can check that one out. Hope Conspiracy, Death Knows Your Name. The one I want to talk about is just, I don't know, I just get like lost in this, and it's AFI's The Art of Drowning. It's basically like a cartoon illustration, and it looks like it's in the graveyard, and it's got kind of Halloween. So if you know like AFI, they had that All Hallows EP. It looks like it's the same artist. What's his name? Alan Forbes. He did a lot for Queens. He's done some stuff for Goldfinger, but it's got like some Halloweenish colors in there with the purple and the orange. And it's just, I don't know. I would love to get a print, and I'm sure they're out there. I'd love to get a print of this. And when I was kind of researching it, the artist, I saw the original sketch, and it was just cool to see the evolution of what looked to just be like pencil on a paper to what it ended up being. But it just, it's a album cover that fits the music. It fits the band at the time. The AFI in 2021 is much different than, I mean, they've gone through, I think, like three phases of their career. This was in that transition from being, you know, the true punk band to almost kind of gothic style in there before they kind of went the mall punk route. But love, love, love this album cover.
Yeah, it's rad. It's like very Tim Burton-esque.
100%. Yes, that's a great point. I never made that connection. Yeah, Alan like Forbes, he's done a lot of, if you Google him, just do a Google image search, you'll be impressed.
Yeah, this is sweet. This would be a good print. It's almost like, as an oil-based painting, this would be really sweet, framed.
I knew where you were going when you said AFI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of the print, because of the album cover and the way they looked as that version of AFI back in, what, mid to late 90s, early 2000s?
Yep, exactly.
Because I had friends that were into them in high school, and I was never not into them. It was just never crossed my path, which is kind of weird because I'm friends with Utuan, but it is what it is. But I do remember the artwork, and the artwork always stuck out. Like, nobody else looks like that. They do. And this is right up that alley for sure. It's beautiful. It's a really well done album cover for sure.
Yeah, I never made the Tim Burton ask.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point, Nate.
And it's weird. There's almost like a snow in here, too. It just, I don't know. I think it's awesome.
Yeah. Speaking of merch, that would translate well, too. I'm sure it has. To like a black t-shirt. Just simple. Yeah. Just that artwork. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Nate. What's your favorite?
All right. I got a favorite. But like Tuan, I want to do an honorable mention just because it is so similar to the Dookie artwork. Is the Head PE self-titled album is one of my favorites. Because so awesome. I get lost in that too. So props to GJ Product 1969 on putting that together, because that album artwork's epic and probably underrated. I don't feel like a lot of people know about that album on a grand scale, but
I didn't know he made that.
Yeah.
I believe it. He's an artist. Yeah. I mean, he's a chef now. And I mean, if you know where he works, there's a Patio Slip sticker out front. So go check us out.
Yep. Ocean Beach. Check it out.
Yep.
So that's my honorable mention.
My honorable mention. You guys suck.
There's no rules, man. No rules.
Okay. Offspring Smash. Continue.
Oh, nice. Also very good. This one goes into our conversation earlier with regards to CBG, also known as consumer product goods, because this album is kind of like a satire on CBG, which is No Doubt's Tragic Kingdom.
So good, dude.
So fucking good. Everything about this album package is just like perfect. And it showcases the music perfectly. And it's like, Southern California, Orange County, mid-90s, when, like, you know, the economy was on fire. Like, it's just like fits perfectly. And there's even some satire in that album, like advertising the fruit and everything. And it's just like, every time I look at it, I'm like, man, they just nailed this. They knocked it out of the park. And the band was solid too, obviously.
Well, that record's great. I mean, on top of the fact that the imagery is awesome.
Yep.
Nate, I've never noticed it says brand, No Doubt brand at the top. And it says bought and sold in the USA. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's like it's almost like a, you know, supposed to be funny kind of thing. But I just reverted back to this many times because I remember seeing it for the first time and being like, that's genius. It's like a infomercial type thing, you know, like just super rad. And obviously Gwen looks stunning in those photos as well.
I was going to say, and Gwen on the cover doesn't suck.
Oh man, she's so, yeah. She's a looker. So anyways, yeah, I had to choose that one as one of my favorites for sure.
I wore this out, this album and Smashing Pumpkins around the same time, Melancholy, with my buddy Bert in the basement playing Troy Aikman football on Super Nintendo. We listened to these, that record and Smashing Pumpkins and Beck all the time. So this is very, very near and dear to my heart as a record and as a CD, you know, our album cover, because we had CDs then and we'd be leafing through the booklet while we were listening to the record. So such a great, I actually almost put this one down, Nate. So I'm glad that you did.
Nice. Yeah, I just love everything about it. Even the vibrant colors of it, you know, it's just like, I feel like it glows. It's just,
well, that version of No Doubt's awesome too.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't get that version of No Doubt for very long, unfortunately.
I know. True.
When I look at that, I immediately think 90s, and I'm trying to think, is it because I know that it came out in the 90s, or there's something, there's a visual theme there with albums from the 90s. You know what I mean? But it does just scream 90s.
Yeah. It's the bright colors, I think.
Another album that you didn't know that would come out in the 90s, Twan, you could be like, yeah, that's a 90s record just from the album artwork. So I think there is an aesthetic and a vibe from a lot of music from the time that it's in. Like, everything's a copycat league. If something sells or looks good, people are going to do their thing, right? They're going to copy it a little bit and try to make it their own, but also use that vibe a decent amount. So I think you could do it with 70s, 80s, 90s for sure. Good pull. All right. Do we want to each do one that fits the, we can talk about one that fits the music, but give a couple.
Yeah.
Yep. So this is, fits the music, adds to the music, enhances the music, however you want to take it.
Yeah.
Who's kicking us off? You want me to go? Or
yeah.
Yeah. This is the ultimate nerd one.
Ultimate nerd one. So I'm actually going to pick one that I don't know if you guys know or not. My alternate, actually, I won't say the alternate in case you guys have it, because you very well might have it. So mine that I'm picking here is the band Blacklisted, Heavier Than Heaven, Lonelier Than God. So if you guys pull that up, if you're listening, pull that up. It's an album cover that is just a photo. It doesn't say anything.
Oh, wow.
Any reference to the band. And if you know Blacklisted, they're a hardcore punk band on Deathwish from Philly area, I believe. And a lot of the lyrics have this, it's like super honest. There's like obviously some desperation in the lyrics. It's super raw. And this just fits that because you don't know why this guy is on the edge of, looks like a bridge. You know, his hands are out. He could be like, what is he thinking? Is he just sightseeing? Is he enjoying it? Is he in pain? You don't know. And it just draws you in. You kind of want to understand what this dude's story is. So I love the fact that they didn't put their logo. They just said, you know what? Here's the photo, and it's going to speak for itself. It's just a stunning photo, and it just, this complements the music brilliantly, and the music complements this picture brilliantly too. It just, I always go back to this. I love the album, love the artwork just as much.
That's an awesome photo. Just looking at it now for the first time, you could take this any number of directions. Is he trying to get to the other side? Is there something on the other side he wants to be at? Or is he looking to jump? Or is he like, nope, this is just a really pretty spot. I like to stand here and be with myself. And I'm sure that kind of totally enhances the music for what it is, for sure.
Yeah, I think you showcased it perfectly. It's like, this is the perfect prime example of like the album artwork is to be interpreted through the music. So the album cover artwork is like, however you interpret these songs, same with the artwork. It's not a distraction. It's not supposed to steer you in one direction. It's like, however you think these songs are, this album cover can kind of follow that same direction, which is cool. Yeah. So in that case, you're right. I think it is a perfect fit because it's just a great fit. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it's definitely not a distraction. And I think that's our point from early on is like, if it's not a distraction, then in that in itself is a perfect fit because you're not taken away from the actual art.
I don't know if you guys have listened to this band at all, but this is the album where you can tell they lean, the band leans into like their grunge appreciation. There's a lot of Nirvana worship on this album.
Nice, nice.
In fact, the title of the album, I think that was one of Cobain's biographies, Heavier Than Heaven.
Yep, I think you're right.
But there's some grunge Nirvana weaved in through this great album. I'll save my alternate one till the end in case you guys have it.
Nice. You want to go, Nate? You want me to?
I'll go. I'm going to do an honorable mention first. It's quick. Adds to the music, fits to the music. Anything by the Big Timers.
Oh, yeah.
Cash Money.
Agreed.
Or Cash Money Records in general. Like, yeah. It's so cheesy that it
the
fits
block
because
it is
what it is. You know, it's just like diamond lettering and all that shit.
Yeah. 400 degrees, juvenile. And yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So anything on those records on
I Got That Work.
Cash Money Records. So honorable
mention.
That's
a great call. That's a great call.
Great call there.
I didn't want to do this one because it's I think it's obvious for nerds, but Tool Lateralis is perfection in every sense of the word. Alex Gray is the artist, good friend of the band. Fantastic artist. In fact, I think me and many people also came to the same conclusion. That we didn't know who Alex Gray was, and then kind of researched Alex Gray through Tool and became fans of his artwork separately for good reason, because it's extremely complex like Tool, very detail oriented like Tool, and legendary like the band Tool. So it's like this perfect matchup. I think it was, you know, made in heaven, and this album in particular, like Tool had been out of the, you know, realm since I think what, 96 with Enema?
Yeah, it'd been 5 years. Yep.
Yeah. So to come back out of the ether, and I remember, I don't know if you guys remember this, in 2000 before Lateralis dropped, there was like these teaser like commercials that would come on MTV, and it was like this 30-second snippet, and it would be just a little bit of like Alex Gray's artwork to be like coming soon. You didn't even know it was Tool. It's just like creepy, creepy, weird artwork. And that's kind of started where I tried to do some research. Like, what is this? Who is this? And when it dropped, it was like very front and center, like, it's going to go with a whole stage show. And if you ever seen a Tool show, you'll know that it's like 50% of the show is like Alex Gray's artwork that, you know, intertwines with this album in particular, but really all their work, because they've really worked with him pretty closely ever since. Yeah. It's just so perfect. And I have this one on wax. Thankfully it's not limited. It says it's limited. It's not.
It's one of the few that they've actually pressed.
Exactly. So yeah, time and time again, I keep coming back to this because it's like, man, that Lateralis album is so deep. And to have artwork that carries it like that is like anything else would be subpar. So talk about like match made in heaven.
I completely agree, and had them, and actually had, I was going to take it the three album run route and say he's on fire. Alex Gray's on fire for that Lateralis 10,000 Days Fear Inoculum. So, I mean, that Fear Inoculum CD with the video and the and the packaging for 10,000 Days with the like the lenses, and you could like look in, like it's just next level detail to with some awesome art, like just amazing, kind of mind blowing art. Every time you look at it, it's something different to go along with the music. Every time you listen to a Tool record or song, you find something in there that you didn't realize you loved. It's just like, whoa, I never heard that part before, because, you know, it's Tool and there's always something in there. Shouts to Danny Carey. We're a day when you hear this, it's his birthday was last week. So he's 60, which is wild because that guy is still a monster on the drums.
Yeah.
One thing I remember about this CD is it had the see-through plastic.
Yep.
The visual just, it works for that. You know what I mean? It just, yeah. And I love the font that Lateralis is in, where like the L and the A and the T and the E and the R and the A are all connected.
Mm-hmm.
It's really stunning. Yeah, this is an all-time album cover. This could fit into your favorite, could be enhances the music, all that.
Yeah, that was one of my, would have been my, I guess my honorable mention now because Nate did it, but okay, so I guess the one that I want to talk about, it's similar to that, the last couple records, but I mean, even if you just look at the majority of Queens of the Stone Age records, you're going to find cool album art that fits that record. It's not necessarily something that's like over time, like the Tool stuff is, where from Lateralis on, they've kind of gone that aesthetic. It's changed here and there with Queens of the Stone Age. If you go back to really self-titled, and then obviously Rated R is fucking iconic. I have a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Like, it's probably my favorite album cover of all time. Like, just it's perfect. That's a perfect album cover for a band like them. And then into
Songs for the Deaf.
Yeah, Songs for the Deaf. Songs for the Deaf is such a cool, the Queen, the, like Devil Horn, like that concept album. It's red and black and different again, but you know, just fits that record. And I think every time they put something out that fits the record, which is awesome. Right up through Villains, like Clockwork and Villains have the same artist on them, and you can see that there's some similarities there, but they're both different too, which is cool. And they came with some awesome vinyl packages. I have both, cool stickers, awesome inserts, just wild stuff that, it's that extra level that brings the music to that next level as far as how things are all packaged together. It's not just one, oh, here's a baby on a cover eating sugar, you know what I mean, or rocking out. It's no, this, we spent some time with this too. We wanted this to look really good. So Queens, really Queens from start to finish, because house band, one of my favorite bands of all time. And that's why I did that.
Yeah. I think they're a perfect example of less is more. It's like, the simplicity of Rated R and Songs for the Deaf.
Mm-hmm.
And even some of the other ones, there's not a whole heck of a lot going on, like Clockwork.
Yep.
Man, iconic, really.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, I think this is a good example of a band that, well, it's really just Josh, has the clearance on, no, this is what I want. Maybe he even brings it to the table. I almost feel like, at least for the first three, like it was maybe part his influence. I mean, Rated R fits his kind of dry humor. Songs for the Deaf, I'm not sure, but definitely the first album fits. If you flip that album, the back is just like him and Nick Oliveri. You know, Nick wearing a t-shirt that says Dare to Keep Kids Off Drugs. And obviously anyone that knows Queens, like their early stuff is very drug influenced. So yeah, I think the less is more thing is very much so the case. And we always talk about it, like translates well to merchandise. So like Songs for the Deaf and Rated R merchandise, like I'll wear that stuff all day because it just looks like somewhat a plain t-shirt. With like a little tiny logo and like,
yeah,
it's very universal. Yeah, man. Good call. I thought about choosing this, but I thought it might get picked. So I'm happy you did, but I
guess
cheat
code, right? We always have those cheat codes.
Well, I chose Tool. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm actually going to keep my alternate one for the next time we do this. Cause we'll
save
do
it?
This again.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
That's a good call.
And there's a cheat code one that I might break out. Cause
I mean, we didn't talk about Rage this week.
Oh, so. Well, you spoiled it.
Kudos to us, guys. We did it. We made it through an episode. We did talk about Deftones.
Or Deftones. I mean,
no, they came up numerous times.
So. Well, we didn't weave them into the. No one
no,
picked
we
them.
We didn't pick them.
Which
right.
We could have very, very, very easily.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you've listened to us, you know we had Frank on because we love that stuff. So there's a reason that they kind of. we almost like put some of these things up against that because we know how good that is. So that's why we use them as a barometer.
That's a good call. That's actually kind of how I went about this, because I was like, A, I didn't want to pick the obvious, but B, it's like, that is the standard. So like anything below Maddox is kind of like bizarre or terrible. And anything above that is, well, it's basically his level or just a different style. So like Alex Gray is a completely different style of artwork, but fits Tool, and kind of only fits Tool. I don't think Alex Gray could work with another artist and have it really transpire, but
it would, or it would step on, it would have Tool vibes. And I think people would
at
see
this
that
point. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
There's some good ones underneath the Frank level too, that aren't quite to his level, but I hear what you're going, where you're going with that. But yeah, no, I'm excited to do that one again. It's obviously, this is one of those subjects that it's a visual medium. So talking about them, we didn't want to give you too many things that were not stuff that you couldn't just recall in your head. So you also have to, think about that when you're doing a segment like this for a podcast. So check the YouTube too. It'll be, the pictures will be there if that's what you really want to do. But yeah, it's a cool segment, and just gets you thinking about awesome artwork, and sometimes that stuff gets overlooked and it shouldn't.
Yeah. And I think you made a point kind of, in between the lines, which is everything we're talking about here is very, very subjective. You know, it's our opinion. Someone might have a completely different take on everything we're talking about here, but collectively we're on a similar wavelength a lot of the times. And even if we're not, like I think a lot of the stuff we talked about tonight that you mentioned, Tuan, I'm going to check out now, or I'm checking out in real time as we're talking about it. But,
drink.
and drink a couple more for the Maddox.
Yeah. Drink for Maddox, drink for in real time. Sorry, Nate, I had to call you out.
Hey. Cadence. How many times did I say cadence? 3 times? 4 times?
No, it's in real time. You said it in real time like 4 times.
while talking about Frank.
I love it. I love it. And this is why we have fun here, because we do stuff like this.
I got punked on my own podcast.
Yeah, just punked Nate. I've been saving that one.
So yeah, it's subjective. If you guys have different takes, anyone listening, send us your thoughts. We'd like to hear what you got.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah, send them in. I'd love to see them. I mean, because we can all go online and look up best album covers of all time, but that's no fun. We want to hear,
did that today and it was no fun.
Yeah, your favorites, like, literally. And how it helps you visualize the album and things like that. That's the stuff that I want to hear.
Cool, good spot to wrap. Yeah, we should call it there. We'll do this one again, with other awesome iconic album art, and I'm excited to talk to you guys next week with whatever episode and whatever topic we've got. And I hope you guys want to come back and do it with us again.
Hell yeah, we'll come up with something good.
Absolutely. Cheers to all the nerds out there.
Peace, podheads.
Certified nerds. See ya.